Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Alrighty, hour number two here on the show. What's happening Tuesday around the country on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, 3 hours a day. Appreciate you hanging with us. We're hanging inside of our Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. What you want and when you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, Rocket can. So, really good first hour. Got into the Mahomes stuff, the Deshaun Jackson stuff. Right now, we get into some NBA. Greg Popovich, this is a story that, you know, the fact that it was strongly refuted by Sean Marks, the Nets GM, as it was, as he did, just, to me, gives it a little further credence. Let's give you a little backstory here. So on a recent podcast, Rasheed Wallace, Bonzi Wells, a few other former players were on it, just kicking it around. And I don't know if it was Bonzi or somebody else, but somebody brought up the notion that the Brooklyn Nets were getting prepared to generate a Godfather-type offer to Greg Popovich to come and coach the Nets. Now, on the surface, it's not crazy. Nets need a head coach. If the Nets get the right coach, Nets could maybe win a championship, certainly be right there in position to win a championship. You go back to March, I know that Stephen A. was touting Greg Popovich as a real off-the-radar, unique option. Not reporting was going to happen, but certainly threw it out there. He was one of three guys he thought they could pursue with any type of vigor. You know, listen, I mean, it's a no-brainer. Nobody needs to waste a second of valuable airtime wasting, you know, would Greg Popovich make the Nets better? That clearly is not even worth wasting time on. What I think is the most compelling dynamic here is not Durant and Popovich. They'd be fine. What do you think of a potential Kyrie Irving Popovich union?
Yeah, so this will be interesting to if it happens, BT, because Kyrie Irving, we know, respects great basketball minds, right? It's one of the reasons, at least he stated, why he wanted to leave the Cleveland Cavaliers and go to a place like Boston, because Brad Stevens has this reputation of being this basketball savant and one of the really good coaches. And so, you know, on that aspect of the game, that I think Kyrie and Greg Popovich, who is also a very deep thinker, just like Kyrie is, it's one of the things that gets Kyrie in trouble sometimes, I think would mesh actually really well. Like the interpersonal side, I think would mesh.
Okay.
I think it's the other side. It's the, you know, the leadership side, the, you know, you need to be the example for our team side that Kyrie Irving might struggle with Greg Popovich, because he demands that of his players, and he demands a humility, I think is the best way to put it, from his stars. You know, think of the stars that he's had down there over the years. You know, even Kawhi Leonard, who, you know, is evolving into a different type of, you know, a elite player in the league. He's never been, you know, this outward bombastic, I'm going to say whatever I feel like saying. He always toes the line. Like, all of his guys always toe the line when it comes to speaking out after games or in adverse situations. So that side of it, I think, would be a little bit problematic. Mm-hmm. But as far as, like, getting along, I think they'd actually get along really well, because they have a lot of the same characteristics.
Mm-hmm. I think the one issue here, and it's a big one, and Pop's history plays out with this, mm-hmm. would be the intolerance to injuries. Think about what happened with Kawhi Leonard.
That's I didn't even think about that, BT, but you're right.
Big part of it.
Kyrie is hurt every year. Every year it's something. Even if it's, you know, 10 games, he's hurt every single year.
He's always hurt. And there would be such pressure. Listen, I mean, whether or not Pop came here and they got to the NBA Finals and they lost, or they won, or they fizzled out in the Eastern Conference semis and they lost in 6 or 7 to the Celtics. Forget about the results or the possible results for a moment. No matter what happens, Greg Popovich is, you know, one of the top 2 or 3 coaches of all time. He's right there with Red Holtzman. With Red Auerbach. He's right there with Pat Riley, Phil Jackson before that. And then you can put him in any order you want, right? Like, you know, just because some guys have more wins, you know, like Lenny Wilkins and, you know, Don Nelstop. I mean, Greg Popovich is a master manipulator of the mind. His consistency is just off the charts amazing. His messaging is on point for his team. The selfishness and egos get exposed immediately. The guy's a great coach, no doubt about it. So no matter what happens, with a possible run in Brooklyn, would it negatively alter his reputation? Obviously. But I think that Popovich, who's going to be 72 in January, I can't prove this, but I think he wants one more. I think he wants a different challenge.
Yeah.
This is coming just from my mind. It's not coming from any sort of intel. Spurs fans, I'm not trying to, you know, hit you sideways here. I just feel like there's one more great act or attempted great act in his, you know, marvelous book of coaching. Don't you agree?
Well, if you're in his shoes, like, and that, I think that's what you're doing, is kind of what I'm thinking as well. Like, if you're in Greg Popovich's shoes, and you have this, you have this storied career already. I mean, the Hall of Fame is not even a conversation. It's like, Greg Popovich, yes, in. Put him in, right? So it's not even a conversation about that. You've made more money than you're ever going to need. You have, you know, the respect of the league. Your teams, players across the league, hell, even the media, who he's coursed with, they respect the hell out of him, right? And so everything you have, you need, you have already. But the one thing that would be a tour de force, so to speak, would be going to a place like Brooklyn that's in the shadow of the New York Knicks with a ton of pressure. And you mentioned that just a second ago, BT, and I think it's a great thing. A ton of pressure with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and some of those good surrounding pieces, you know, around that, on that team. And can you make them a winner? And if you do, and you start to take some of that shine or that spotlight away from the Knicks, which have just dominated the New York conversation, even when the Knicks aren't as good as the Brooklyn Nets, I think it creates something that's lasting, right? And it's lasting in the media capital of the world, as opposed to, you know, down in San Antonio. Not that they're a small market by any means. But it's
no, they
not,
are.
It's
no,
not,
they definitely, they are.
But it's still Texas, you know what I mean? But it's not New York, you know what I mean? And so I think if that happens and that opportunity is available and Greg Popovich is dialed into the challenges, because it's a different type of challenge than he'll ever have had to deal with before, even though he has coached the Olympic teams. But still, you know, I think it would be great for all parties involved because, you know, and most importantly, I think BT, it reinvigorates him, right? Hasn't it felt like, I mean, we speculated this over the last couple of years. Man, you think Greg Popovich is going to retire? You know, we know tragically his wife passed away, and it's like we're just waiting for him to retire.
Yeah.
I think if he went and took on this challenge in Brooklyn as it's being presented right now, doesn't that invigorate you? I mean, I'm putting myself in his shoes like you were trying to put yourself in his shoes.
Yep.
If I wanted to be invigorated and I could get one of the best, if not the best player in the game in KD, a healthy KD, I should say, and not necessarily an injured KD, but if a healthy KD with a good piece like Kyrie, a great piece like Kyrie, I mean, that would be awesome if I was Greg Popovich.
I would view that as a galvanizer. How many times in your early 70s do you get a chance to do anything, you know, where you're really truly a desired commodity, first of all? Like he still is at the age of 71, based on how great he's been and how many. So the answer to that is what, 1% of the population roughly. And you know, also to do so in a very different place in terms of visibility, in terms of energy, a totally different conference. No, that could be real galvanizing. And the motivation for the Nets beyond the obvious of his coaching acumen. But, you know, there's this little thing that, you know, and I know that you and I have said it a couple times on the show here, but following the 22 or following the 20, 21-22 season, both of those guys could opt out. So they signed four-year contracts.
Yep.
One is in the books already.
Yep.
You know, I mean, next year is already year two, and then after that, if they don't like the way it's going, boom, they could bounce.
That's right.
So if you don't bring in a coach that, you know, gets you to a championship level quick, once the die is cast, especially with those two guys, like I believe that, you know, Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant are when they make up their mind. And this is not like a diss or a knock, but I do believe that they're competitively stubborn. Like, I believe that there'll be a very small window to coerce them to stay if they don't hire the right person now and it goes somewhat sideways and they languish in the four seed for the next year and a half or so.
And BT, that's why you're starting to hear these suggestions or rumors that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are going to have a say. And who's going to be the head coach of the Nets, which is, I mean, maybe LeBron gets away with that under the radar, but I mean, very rarely does it feel like, you know, any other player in the league has that ability. But these guys, I think, probably want it. And if they don't get, I mean, what do they have to get to next year for them to at least consider it to be? They got to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, right, next season in order for them to consider this being viable. And if they get knocked out in the first round because the team's not good enough around them, there's no way they're opting in, you know what I mean, unless they win it the next season. And so, yeah, this coaching search is paramount for the Nets. And I keep hearing, you know, these insinuations that Jacque Vaughn is already, you know, locked in. He's going to be the next head coach. And he looks the part. He's a good looking dude. I think he's got great acumen on the bench. But is he the right guy for these superstars? That's the question. I'm not knocking him as a coach at all. I think he could be a great coach.
I got you.
But is he the right guy for Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant right now, because they need to win right now?
I would say no, because his learning curve is going to be a little steeper than other established veteran coaches who have already won. So I think that answers that question. By the way, here's Sean Marks. So he was on with our buddies Joe and Evan on The Fan on Friday, and we know Evan's a big Nets guy. Marks told Beningo and Evan Roberts, Pop has a job, so I will say that. All right, not exactly.
I'll say nothing. I will say nothing. That. I will not deny it. I will not confirm it, but I will say nothing.
Uh-huh. And I will. And obviously, we all know he's an amazing, amazing coach, and to be quite frank, an even better leader. So I'll let Pop continue to coach for the Spurs, and he owes it to them, and they owe it to him. I'm sure he's quite happy there. Now, keep in mind, where'd Sean Marks come from? He came from the Spurs. So there's a great familiarity right there. So that's the other element, and that's a very important one that we just kind of incorporated at the end of the segment. But to me, that's important, because Popovich is not the kind of guy who's going to go into a situation and hope that there's stability and hope that there's a core basketball belief and unity. But knowing Sean Marks from his days with the Spurs, he already knows that there's great cohesion, great trust, and that they're coming from the same playbook there. So that's a big obstacle that's already overcome.
Yeah. No, I mean, the reality, what do you think the reality of this is? I mean, the likelihood.
I think there's
percentage.
Some truth to it.
Is it 50-50? Is it 20-30? 70, you know, 20, 70-30 or the other way? You know, it's interesting to think about the reality of this.
I'll give you my opinion. I think that, you know, despite that tacit denial by Sean Marks right there, and he's got to say that clearly.
Yeah, of course.
I believe behind the scenes, the power brokers, that the Nets are doing everything in their power to somehow, you know, convey to Pop and eventually coerce him to come. They will continue to make sure they don't sabotage anything publicly. I believe Sean Marks is a good basketball guy, so he'll have an option B, and I believe it'll be a pretty good one. Mm-hmm. I don't think it'll go from Popovich to Jacque Vaughn. I think it could go from Popovich to, I don't know that they'd hire Mark Jackson, but more along those lines. There won't be this drop off in identity. But I believe that they're putting a lot of the chips in the table to get Pop. I do believe that.
Yeah,
why
wouldn't you? I mean, exactly. It's now. The time is now. I think sometimes teams get caught thinking about the future and planning, you know, 5 years out, when in reality, you're built to win kind of right now. And you got some free agents that are going to be coming due. I know Joe Harris, our UVA brethren, he's coming due. And so you got to act and strike while the iron is hot. Otherwise, you miss the opportunity. And the biggest one we talked about a little bit ago, BT, the Kyrie and KD can opt out. And if they decide that this isn't the place, that this organization isn't committed to winning, right? And commitment to winning means bringing in all the supporting players, as we heard Kyrie talk about last season, even in a rebuild-ish kind of year, because KD wasn't playing. He talked about we need more pieces around him. So if they're not willing to do that,
that's right,
and then not bring in a coach, there's no way these guys are staying here. They'll go find some other, you know, situation to try to,
revive,
exactly. Yeah, yeah, you know what I mean? So this is, it's imperative. And I know we're not, it doesn't get a lot of focus right now because we're worried about the restart. And hell, both of these teams still have, you know, seasons left to play in a sense. But this is one of the most important decisions that the Nets will make, probably in the next 15 or 20 years.
The way that I would wrap it up, I agree with that sentiment entirely. The way I would wrap it up from my point of view, one thing that Pop's got to really consider too, because the money will be there, whatever terms he wants, he'll get. And that's mm-hmm. what the Godfather deal alludes to, obviously. Whatever you want, you get it. But the one thing he can't control is the erratic nature in the decision-making. Maybe erratic's not the right, maybe, but volatility. There's been some volatility in Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving's decision-making. And Kevin Durant eventually, you know, he was drafted by Seattle, but wasn't long for Oklahoma City. That's his right. We get it. We don't begrudge you. A lot of people did because you were up 3-1. They came back, they beat you. You joined the team that beat you, and then he won championships there. But you were the best player on that team, so he gets a pass for me. He's one of the all-time greats. I've got nothing but love for Durant. He's a great player. All right. So Durant then going to Golden State and then wanting to try something different. We thought it might be the Knicks and it's the Nets. That's three teams already. Now, does anybody True. Think that Kevin Durant retires a Net? The answer is no.
No.
Kyrie Irving, we know his path, you know, the guy in Cleveland, you know, getting a little bit better, 32 wins, slowly eking toward respectability. LeBron comes, he's not enthused about that because it was his team, now it's not. And, you know, they win a championship, he wants out, goes to Boston, kind of acts like a bit of a clown, alienates some young players, wasn't a great leader, was just a flat-out bad leader, actually. Then he pledges his allegiance to Boston in front of everybody with the microphone, then he changes his mind, and it's his right to change his mind for sure, he's earned that. Now he goes to the Nets. Does anybody think that he's going to finish up with the Nets? The answer is no. So if you're Popovich and you want to give up all you know with San Antonio and come to a situation where your two best players could leave in 2 years and in all probability probably will, that's something you have to consider.
True, but at that point, would not he just retire?
And can't answer that.
75 years old, maybe. Now he rides off into the sunset. Maybe. So you're right. So the ceiling is high, but so is the floor, right? So
we're going to pull Jordan.
Yeah.
The floor is the floor. What did he say? Floor is ceiling?
The ceiling is the floor. Yeah, something like that.
The ceiling is the floor. Is that what it was?
No, the ceiling is the roof, I think.
The ceiling is the roof. Because the ceiling is the floor is actually a compliment.
Yeah, that's like right. Like ours, the ceiling. Right. No, I knew it was something that didn't make much sense.
Because MJ had a couple of scotches before he grabbed that mic like he did on the Last Dance.
Oh, you know, man.
Smoking that cigar and throwing them back. The bourbon. All right, we've got a little something else on the NBA coming up next here on Tiki and Tierney. So we know that the players will be allowed to wear social justice messages on their uniforms during the restart, but there's somebody who's in the league who ain't down with it. We'll tell you why, and we'll tell you if we think he's right. That's next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
When your battery goes dead, everything could come to a stop. Don't take a chance on getting stranded. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test your battery free of charge. And if your battery needs to be replaced, the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. Keep your car on the road by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Or when you need auto parts fast, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com and pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to you curbside. Or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. And now, for a limited time, save 15% when you buy a set of Brake Best pads and two Brake Best rotors. Get your auto parts quickly. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices, every day.
CBS Sports Radio's toll-free lines, 1-855-212-4227. That's 1-855-212-4CBS, brought to you by Geico. Do you know that right now Geico's offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn a little more. All right, busy Tuesday. Jamming it all in for you. Hopefully everybody's doing well. Appreciate you hanging with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. You might recall last week, I believe it was on Friday, I guess it would have been Friday, we tried to connect with Tom Glavine, and we got on about 30 seconds, and the phone was a mess, and we just couldn't make it happen. So we tried to push it back, and it's going to actually happen today. So we'll have Tom coming up next segment, talk about the season and all that's going on with baseball. A lot of things to dissect there. Let's also dissect this here, Teague. This is pretty interesting. So as you are aware, but for those who might not be aware, the NBA is reportedly going to allow players to choose from various social justice messaging to display on the back of their jerseys for the NBA restart. All right. Now, a couple of players aren't overly thrilled with the mechanics of it. Before we play some sound and say who those two players are, Mark Spears, who's with ESPN, was able to get the list, and it includes the following phrases. So it's got to be from one of these, or I guess you could rotate, but it's got to be from this group. Black Lives Matter, Say Their Names, Vote, I Can't Breathe, Justice, Peace, Equality, Freedom, Enough, Power to the People, Justice Now, Say Your Name, Si Si Puede, that means yes, we can in Spanish, Liberation, See Us, Hear Us, Respect Us, Love Us, Listen to Us, Stand Up, Ally, Anti-Racist, I Am a Man, Speak Up, How Many More, Group Economics, Education Reform, and Mentor. Okay, so there's a lot to choose from, and they cover a wide swath of things that are obviously very important. Mike Scott is with the 76ers, weighed in first, doesn't like it.
They gave us some names and phrases to put on the back of jerseys. That was terrible. It was just a bad list, bad choice. They didn't give players a chance to, voice their opinion on. They just gave us a list to pick from, So, that was bad. That's terrible.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder where this list was generated from. And more importantly, and we don't get much clarity from a lot of the players about what they want to have on the back of these jerseys. But I wonder where...
Maybe specific names?
Yeah, maybe. Right. Possibly. That's probably likely what it is. And I wonder if the NBA is even open to adjusting this. I mean, we're still a few weeks away from, getting to the actual start. Should they be able to allow to choose their own phrase? That's the question a lot of people have been asking. And the problem with that is you don't know where that veers to. And so at the end of the day, the NBA, and I'm not being an apologist for them, the NBA has to protect their brand as well. And so there's some things that could slip through that have meanings that they might not be aware of. I think that's probably part of their thinking. But I'm wondering, one, where the list came from, and two, and who was involved in making that list, and then two, is the league set in stone with this? I mean, I don't know the answers to those right now because this just came out. We just know that the players are upset with it. Do they have a right to be upset? I mean, I guess so. But this is something that's unprecedented. It's an unprecedented circumstance. It's not like there's past history to draw upon to get this right from both sides. Yep. And so, I can see it on both ways.
Yeah. I mean, I can too. I can't imagine baseball players going to have the option. I don't think hockey players will.
No. The NFL won't.
I was going to say, with the NFL uniform police, I can't imagine they'll let that happen. Listen, the best solution probably would have been, install some sort of proper protocol with checkpoints, which, as Tiki points out, if there's a messaging, if there's some sort of messaging that, might be code for something else, or obviously things the NBA wants to stay away from. Submit it by a certain timeline. I mean, it's not that hard to stitch this on the uniform.
No,
it's really not. So submit it by a certain time. If you don't submit anything, you are only allowed to choose from one of those 20 or so options. But if you're proactive, it's like, listen, when the Remember when all the players were getting the updates, via the text, right?
Yeah, yeah.
For CBA stuff.
Yep.
Some guys elect to read it and all the nuances, and some guys don't. And
yep.
You know, if you're proactive enough as a player and you abide by the protocol that they install,
yeah.
And you know, you show initiative and you have something that's meaningful and you get it to them by the certain date, and they say, you know what? Absolutely, we get it. Boom, you can roll with this. Then I think it would probably be more satisfactory.
Yeah.
Is it somewhat limiting? Sure, but it's better than all the other sports again.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point, BT. It's better. No other sport is doing this right now, and especially in this unconventional time that we're in and we're sitting in, obviously with the pandemic, but also the social justice world that's going on around us, the reckoning that's going on around us. But at the same time, this isn't like a hard problem to solve. This is something that is easily talked out and talked through. I haven't heard from the league that this is a hard line that they're staking, that they're taking. And if it is, I'll stand corrected. But mm-hmm. It just feels like this is an easy problem to solve. If you are Mike Scott and fellow Wahoo, by the way, you want to just grieve, you know, voice your grievance. Mm-hmm. Hey, Commissioner Silver, this is what we're thinking. You know, is there a way that we can have some sort of dialogue about this? And then you come back to us with a decision, you know, as opposed to, you know, getting upset about it before you actually try to have a conversation. And again, that may have already happened, but I don't think so.
I think you're right, because we probably would have heard that. And listen, you know, of all the commissioners, it seems like Adam Silver's going to hit you back with a text quicker than anybody else, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And it seems like it's a pretty good way, open two-way street, two-way dialogue. That was Mike Scott. And then Jaylen Brown of the Celtics agreed. Here's Jaylen.
I think that the list that was agreed to through the NBA, I think, was a little bit limiting. I agree with Mike Scott. I would like to see, because I think it can still happen, more options available to put on the back of our jersey. We understand that anything vulgar our league doesn't necessarily represent, but for issues and causes like such as now, I think that list is an example of, you know, a form of limitations. I think we should be able to express our struggle just a little bit more. I was disappointed, very disappointed in the list as well.
See, that's the way to attack it. That's proactive. It's sensible. You present it. You have a conversation. The worst they could do is say, no, this is the list here.
Yeah.
They probably won't. They probably would expand it. And, you know, listen, I know the headline looks, you know, as if there's acrimony and maybe there's some hurt feelings, or maybe it's viewed as an insensitivity or not fully getting the picture. I can't speak for the players, especially the minority players. I can't do that. But I do think that they will be on the same page opening night.
Yeah.
Everybody. This is not a big deal.
This is not a long-term problem. This is nope. Easily solvable, I
yeah.
believe. And especially if you start getting, you know, LeBron James talking about this, or some others who have real voice, like bigger voices from the player's perspective, Chris Paul, then you'll start to see some movement here. This isn't something that's unsolvable.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. Okay. Let's get the update for Mac. A little baseball on the other side. Tom Glavine, Hall of Famer. We'll talk to him. That's after Rich Ackerman's update, which is right now. Here's Rich. Tonight at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, Venus Williams, Rob Gronkowski team up with WWE superstar Becky Lynch and actor comedian Joel McHale as they compete in over-the-top challenges that put everybody to test. See who comes out a winner. It's Game On, CBS Sports Network. All right, really looking forward to continuing the conversation we started at the end of last week here. The great Tom Glavine, Hall of Famer, 305 career wins, 2 Cy Youngs, and you know, one of the smart guys, passionate about the game still, follows it, obviously. And we had him on Friday. We didn't have a great reception. We didn't really get too deeply into the conversation, but Tom, good enough to call us back and try to continue this. A couple things we wanted to run by him. Tom, welcome back. Tiki and Tierney, how you doing, man?
I'm good. I appreciate you guys' patience. So let's give this another shot.
Yeah, this better be good. You make us wait 5 days. I mean, you better come with some good sound bites here, Glavine. Get us some newsworthy stuff, okay?
Yeah, I mean, I'm nervous. Like, I had to wait 5 days for my next start, so I better
exactly.
Recover here.
Yeah, you're right. You're lucky it's not a 4-man rotation. We would have had you on yesterday. All right. I think the only thing that I said to you in the interview when we started was that I think Rob Manfred's been bad. I really do. And listen, I can go chapter and verse, but the short summation is I thought he butchered the Astros situation any commissioner calling the World Series trophy a piece of tin is bad. June 10th, he tells us unequivocally there will be baseball. June 14th, well, I don't think we'll have baseball. Now there's four teams that had to shut down camps because of the testing. I'm not saying that's on him, but he's still the commissioner. Tom, how do you defend at least the last couple of months, Rob Manfred? He's been bad.
I think it's one of those things that we're in uncharted territory, and I think to some extent, obviously, it's easy to look at things that have happened and say, well, maybe you should have done this, maybe you should have done that. And I think that is even more so in a situation like this where we've never dealt with anything like this before. So having said that, look, I think when we talked about this for a minute last week, my initial reaction was I think both sides in this scenario have had some missteps. I think sometimes both sides are guilty of A, getting out in front of news to try and create a positive vibe, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I think both sides have been guilty of trying to state their case too much publicly. Now, I get that to some extent. Like I said, having been through the strike in 1994, the lockout in 1990, you know, other labor situations, there's always going to be some of that because you're trying to present your case to the public. And let's face it, you're trying to get people on your side. Again, in this case, where this was such a unique circumstance, and at the end of the day, people really don't care that you're squabbling over mm-hmm. billions of dollars. They just want baseball. So I think that was the mistake both sides really made. In this case, was they made their squabbles too public in an environment where it really didn't need to be public.
Let me just follow up real quick on that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I got you, Tom. And that's a fair, measured response. Jeter, you know, one of your contemporaries just, you know, lit him up the other day. And Jeter never says anything that's remotely.
Well, he's on ownership.
No, I know.
So, you know,
I got you. Yeah. But Tom, you know, Jeter never.
But he let out both sides, though. I mean, he wasn't just on the owners. And
yeah,
friend.
But
it was on both sides, too.
In Jeter's world, that was like chin music. But the point is, do you believe, even though these circumstances have been tough, and I'm not saying that he's been dealt a couple of pocket aces if he's playing poker, I'm not saying he's been dealt good cards, but do you think that the player trust can ever really, really be strong, that bond believable between the players and the commissioner? Do you believe so?
I don't know that it ever has been, and I really don't know that it needs to be. I think at the end of the day, nobody's been in more of an adversarial relationship with the commissioner than, say, I was and some of my contemporaries during the 1994 strike. Okay, Rob was the lead lawyer, and you talk about a guy being on an opposite side that you really had some serious problems with. That was the scenario. Now, having said that, I like Rob. You know, I respected Rob and how he went about his business at that point in time. I didn't agree with any of his positions. Obviously representing the owners, but as a person, I liked him. And I think in this instance, he's the commissioner. Everybody needs to remember he represents the owners. You know, as much as we talk about the commissioner and the best interest of baseball, which there is some of that, at the end of the day, he's employed by the owners. So if I was a player today and knowing that I personally like Rob, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I trust everything that the commissioner or anybody else has to say in baseball. Let's face it, it's a business.
Yep.
Everybody's looking out for their own best interests. So you have to keep that in mind. Now, do you hope at the end of it all that both sides can sit down and have a civil conversation and get to a point where they can get something done? Of course you do. But I think you're being a little bit naive if people think that the trust level has to be just unbelievably good for there to be a working relationship between Rob and the players. You know, there's always going to be a level of distrust. I said it early on, and it got a lot of attention, and I was doing a ton of radio shows where, you know, I said initially that the players were in a tough place with the PR battle when the owners were talking about a 50-50 revenue split. The end of the day, that's what the strike in 94 was over.
Yeah.
So I could understand the players not wanting to go down that road, and I didn't blame them. I wouldn't have either. But at the end of the day, there's always that level of distrust as to what the owners are telling players, how truthful they're being, particularly when it comes to revenue in the game. And I don't know if that's ever going to change.
Okay, so that's the great Tom Glavin, who's in the Hall of Fame. 305 wins will get you there. A couple of Cy Youngs as well, the World Series champion, World Series MVP, and he's with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
Now, the other side of this restart that we probably haven't paid enough attention to, given the debate that's going on over finances between the owners and the Players Association, is the health and the safety of the players and their families. And we've heard many, Mike Trout being one of the more prominent ones, saying he might not play because his wife is pregnant. He doesn't want to bring it home. He doesn't want to get sick. We got older skippers or coaches that may be vulnerable as well. Can you see from a player's perspective, Tom, you know, this not working out with the Stars, at least? There's some certain guys are going to have to play. They just want to play. They need to add bats, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there's a handful of moneyed Stars that might say, this isn't worth it, man. Can you see that happening? What would it mean for the league in this season?
Well, I absolutely can see it happening. Again, I think it was another one of the things that I talked about initially when, you know, when people were kind of being turned off by what was happening with baseball from an economic standpoint, 100% understood it. My caution to people was, okay, that's fine, but you can't be critical of players if they decide that they don't want to play, because they all have their own reasons for not playing. And I think for a lot of guys, look, there are a lot of guys in baseball who have pre-existing conditions. We know there are a handful of guys that have battled cancer, just to name one. So you can understand those guys. We don't fully know what the dynamic in every player's household is. You know, are they caring for elderly people? Do they have a spouse or a child that has a pre-existing condition? So, you know, absolutely the players have to have concerns. And if a guy decides to bow out because he's concerned about it, then he has every right to do that. And I think we have to respect that. I think at the same time, we hope that not enough of those guys do, so it starts to bring into question the integrity of the season, so to speak. But I think, again, I've been asked this question a lot. If I was playing today, would I play? I probably would. Mm-hmm. But I'm in a situation where I don't have a pre-existing condition. I don't have a situation at home that I'm necessarily worried about. Sure, I'd be worried about bringing it home, but I don't have a family member that fits into that, you know, high-risk category. But I think we have to be respectful of every player's decision, because we don't know what every player's situation is.
You know, David Price obviously only has to answer to David Price and do what's right for David Price and David Price's family. But I was thinking about this, Tom, like, you know, if you play, and granted, he's got $200 million in the bank. He's got a Cy Young. He's been on five All-Star teams. I mean, first overall pick out of Vandy back in the day. Guy's had a tremendous career. But at, like, as a, if I could only look at it like from my point of view, if I was a major league player right now, whether I had a great resume or a just beginning resume, and I was getting ready to start my first season with a new team, I would feel a little more pressure to play for that team. Like, at least if I was with the Yankees for 5 years, or if I'm Freddie Freeman, I've been with the Braves for almost a decade, whatever it is. Not that it needs justification, but that professional pressure, that peer pressure to show up to the new team, to me would be pretty strong. Does that make any sense?
No, I 100% agree with that. Again, I don't know David Price's underlying situation beyond he's just decided he doesn't want to play. But yeah, that's one of the guys that I looked at and I thought, okay, well, again, I'm not questioning his decision, but I looked at it and I thought, okay, well, this is going to be an interesting scenario come next year for all the reasons you just said. Here's a guy who just got traded. He's new to a team. And, you know, anytime you get traded or you move teams, whatever, you obviously want to get off to a good start and lend a good impression in the whole nine yards. And I wonder how this affects that next year. Now, I don't know. Now, having said that, would that be the reason why I would decide to play if I thought it wasn't a good idea? Probably not either. But I do think that's one of those ones that jumped out at me that I thought, okay, this one's going to be interesting to follow going forward for the reasons that you know, we just talked about.
Okay. You know, Tommy, you know, the other thing we've heard in basketball with their bubble and the championship, how it's going to be played out in this isolated environment. Some people are saying, look, we're actually going to think more of this one, right? It was much harder than a regular championship. And, you know, that's probably saying too much. But from a baseball perspective, we know why a long season, 162 games, is so it's difficult, man. There's injuries, there's slumps, there's what happens at the trade deadline. It's like all of these factors that go into making the champion. And the Nationals get brought up a lot because they were, you know, significantly under 500 after 50 or 60 games last year. So when you look forward, or at least when we look back on this season after the World Series champion is crowned, what's going to be the emotion? Is it going to be, man, those guys really had to work for it, or God, you played 60 games, man? What's the feel of this season going to be?
No, I don't think that anybody who is on a championship team at the end of this year is going to tell you they feel like it's illegitimate.
Yeah, not them, so not might, the champion. Not right. The champion, Tom. I'm talking about everybody else.
Exactly. You might have other guys, but so what? Who cares? Yeah. You know, I mean, to me, you can argue about what a 60-game schedule says, but at the end of the day, if everybody's playing by the same rules, then whoever's left standing at the end has earned it. Now, there's going to be some interesting scenarios, right? I mean, one of the conversations that I've had with some other radio shows is, you know, how does this change MVP stuff? How does it change Cy Young Award stuff? And I think all those things are definitely going to be impacted by a shorter season. You're going to have some guys maybe that emerge as an MVP that in 162-game schedule, they wouldn't. You're probably going to see more closers in the mix for the Cy Young Award because starting pitchers aren't going to get that many wins. So I think you're going to see some of those dynamics. But at the end of the day, look, I look at the Braves situation, right? I look at the National League East. The way this schedule is set up where you're playing 40 games in your own division and then 20 in your sister division in the American League, I think virtually every division, whoever comes out on top and comes out standing, has earned it. Now, that's not to say you're not going to have a team or two that is a surprise, but we have that every year anyway.
Yeah.
You know, every year it seems like there's one or two teams that nobody picked at the beginning of the season to be in the playoffs, and it happens. But I think under the scenario now where, like I said, I don't know the other divisions as well, obviously, as I know the National League East and the American League East. But if you're standing after 60 games in the National League East after you played 40 in that division and 20 in the American League East, you've earned it. And I don't think there's anything anybody can say to take that away from you.
Agreed. We got 10 seconds. Quick trivia question. We had your boy Smoltzy on the show the other day. How many times combined do you think that you, Greg, and John struck out the great Tony Gwynn combined?
I don't know how many combined, but compared to those two, I own Tony, and I think he hit 320 off of me. So,
okay,
like
now it's three total strikeouts. You have two of them.
Wow, nice.
Oh, I see. I owned him.
Yeah, exactly. Greg never punched him up, and Smoltzy got him once, so it's three.
Tells you how good Tony was, didn't it?
Oh, he was phenomenal. Tom, I'm happy we made this happen. Thank you very much, buddy.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys' patience. Have a great day.
Oh, take no care. Doubt. Be back well, to you, man. Tom Glavine, great Hall of Famer, 305 wins. Former Brave great.
Dude, he did own him. Struck him out twice.
I owned him.
Tony. I wonder what the most – we got to do this in the break.
What?
Who struck out Tony Gwynn the most and what that number was?
Boy, if you didn't ask me as we were going to break, I could probably give you a decent process of elimination guess based on the Padres and how the frequency in which they played some teams and guys that were with the Dodgers for a while and blah, blah, blah. We'll come up with something for you. We'll get it. Also, get back to Patty Mahomes, third hour on the show on this Tuesday. Tiki and Tierney, come on back. CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.